Entwined is a podcast about how so much of the world around us is wound or twisted together. This podcast strives to bear unexposed or indiscernible connections using historical and anecdotal sources. I am P.S. McKay, and along with Elliot Gladstone, this is Entwined. Before we begin, I want to take a moment and say thank you to you, the listeners, who have taken the time to download our program. The attention we have received is mind-boggling and quite unexpected. Just 6 weeks since going live, we have been given wonderful reviews and are approaching 1,000 subscribers. Needless to say, this attention far exceeded our expectations. And as a thank you, we are celebrating our first few months by hosting a t-shirt giveaway. We'll be giving away one original Entwined shirt to a lucky listener for doing a very simple task. All you have to do to be entered is to pick your favorite episode, and then tweet or share it on Facebook with the hashtag #StayTwined. Everyone loves a cool t-shirt, right? For more details, visit the news section of our website, entwinedpodcast.com. Thank you again for your support, and stay twined. When I was entering my sophomore year, I changed schools. Now, before I go any further, this was a good change for me, and I ended up in a wonderful, good place with good friends. But the transition that first year, it was brutal. This was the year people were getting their driver's license. It was a small town where it felt like everyone knew each other. As an awkward 16-year-old, and let's face it, there were only a blessed few who were never awkward when they were in their mid-teens. It was a rough time. These people knew each other from kindergarten. How could you compete with that? How could you stand out? And I remember those first few weeks coming home to an empty house, and I would just lay in bed staring at the ceiling, overcome with the deepest sense of loneliness and dread. All I wanted to do was get rid of the despair that gripped me every morning as I walked off to the bus stop, grappling with my new plan on whom I would sit with at lunch that day. One afternoon, during an unusually warm September day, I came home, dropped my bag off, and just left wandering. There was no purpose but to just run away from the darkness. I had a reputation in my family for not being able to remember the way to the grocery store. You know, the one you would go to with your parent at least twice a week? I had no idea. And the thought of me wandering alone in a new town of all places was nothing but bad news. I found myself in thick woods eventually. I had no thoughts, just a sense of relief with every step I took through the dark green shade of those New England trees. At some point, as I glided between the trunks, I let the sweet smells fill my nose. There was a soft hush that was accented with a tumbling sound of the wind that whispered through the branches. And I rode those waves again and again, feeling better, more like myself, as I let nature cover me with a more than welcome embrace. It was not the friendship that I longed for that I knew I would eventually attain. It was a relief that washed over me, standing there alone, surrounded by the whispers of the trees, the chittering of the squirrels, and the warm breath of the northeastern air. I felt like myself again for the first time in a very long time, and I knew it was going to be all right, and I recommend this for you. It's clinically recommended that exercise, even the slow motion of a casual walk, can help with your dopamine levels to even out your brain chemistry. To this day, every now and then, when the world seems to get too much, I'll just take a walk and find my old friend, my fix. America it seems, is in the constant state of fury. Worried about itself, what the next problem is that lies around the bend, and it is reflected in a horrible epidemic that for some reason has gone under the radar until very recently. But it's been around for decades. I'm talking about America's opioid addiction. The numbers are staggering, and while I thought that this stemmed from the simple issue of people using illegal drugs and that was the source of the scourge, I was frighteningly wrong. 80% of all opioid users get their supply from a medical prescription, a perfectly legal and legitimate source. A source that you are supposed to trust because of their white coats, their decades of schooling and years of high-intensity training. Our doctors are our dealers. Now, I was wondering how that can be. How is it that there are these doctors, these men and women who are surely much smarter than I, that are unwittingly supplying and fueling this scourge that is washing over our cities, our towns, and our families? Well, of the doctors that prescribe these painkillers, 80% of the medication comes from only 20% of the prescribers. It's come to a head now because there are now 80 Americans a day that succumb to opioid overdose. A day. And in a country where 114 million people suffer from one form of chronic pain or another, that's staggering and scary. That is a very large population that is prone to this medication. And a majority lack access to good therapy and programs. Those prescription painkillers were first looked upon as a godsend, a cheap and easy way to treat the untreatable. And it now was a way to shorten their painful lives, not bring any value. There is hope. Emergency rooms have begun new protocols in prescribing stronger forms of Tylenol rather than oxycodone, Percocet, or codeine, and outside prescriptions are slowing and even reducing with greater awareness. But there is still that fix that everyone needs, that drive that can never be whole without that pill. And deaths from this abuse are expected to rise before these policies can really take hold. Brian Smith was born on July 16, 1957. He lived an everyman sort of life in northern New England. He was a simple man that kept mostly to himself. He was touched with not being particularly bright from early on. Now, whether this was a symptom of his mother's actions while in the womb, or just the fact that he didn't get the support he needed as he grew up in school, I don't know. His brother grew up to become a deputy sheriff in the area as years went by, so there was some success in the family to live up to. And while I can't find many records of his early life, I can trace a singular defining moment that left him to destiny. In 1979, he was involved in a terrible car accident that left him partially disabled. He lived a forlorn life, alone and in chronic and uncontrollable pain. My opinion, he may as well have been killed that day with the way that he was living his life ever since. He tried to make something of it. He had a reputation for woodworking and doing small jobs around town when the pain wasn't so bad on those good days. Lisa Corey, a former girlfriend of Brian's, described how he would help her out and fix her car despite his worsening health. She stated how she would protest him straining himself with the mechanical work or any of the other jobs that she had around, but he insisted he needed to get the job done. For her, he was being kind-hearted. This was a sentiment shared by another town friend, Judy Townsend. Mind you, her first impression was of a rough, uncouth man with a coarse personality that somehow eventually grew on her, and she was able to see a man who struggled with his pain and his demons every day. He would hide it with a sharp sense of humor, many times, and she would talk with him about how he could put his simple brain to a more effective use. And while he endeared himself to a select few people, Brian was still beholden to his pain. In 1989 began a string of 11 driving convictions over the course of the next 10 years, ranging from reckless driving to multiple DUIs. But tenaciously, he was always able to get his driver's license back and be traveling on the road, primed for one fateful day in 1999. It was a warm June day in northern New England. The weather was perfect. I imagine a quiet, serene forest road traveling through the trees, only to be interrupted by an occasional car. On that day, Brian had a hankering for what he later described to be Mars's bars. Rather than be alone, he loaded his two dogs, Pistol and Bullet, into the minivan, and the three of them took off, disrupting the quiet road on the way. There is no record of him drinking that day, nor being under the influence of any other substance. As he was coming to a lonely hill, his Rottweilers, as Rottweilers tend to do in a moving car, were restless and actively trying to get into a cooler he had stored in the back. Brian, while speeding through the countryside faster than he should have, became distracted and turned back to stop them from causing any more trouble. His attention was diverted to the back as he came to the apex of the hill, inadvertently swerving to the side. It was a small deer that Brian thought he hit. In those frantic moments after the loud bang and the desperate correction, he took stock of the situation. It appeared the van had made it through relatively well. Deer strikes can be fatal for many motorists, especially for ones like Brian, who tended to have a penchant for speeding. Just as he was gaining his composure and settling down, as he regained control, he noticed something in his passenger seat. They had not been there before. Stopping in a sudden motion, Brian pulled to the side and realized it wasn't a small deer that caused the scare. Sitting in the passenger seat of that old minivan was a pair of damaged glasses, ones that belonged to the person he just made unceremonious contact with. Stephen King's glasses. I don't need to describe Stephen King. You all know him in some form or another. He was in the middle of his daily 4-mile walk. The week had been a good one for him. He had just dropped his son off at the airport after having the whole family under one roof for the first time in years. He carried a book with him that day, as he was known to read while on the walks, but he was not reading at that moment. As Brian's van swerved across the road, there was no place for King to go. The impact threw him 14 feet away into a ditch. Donald Baker, a local man who witnessed the impact from his pickup, noticed that he was surprised to see King even alive. Per his words, he was in a tangled mess, lying crooked and had a heck of a gash in his head. He kept asking what happened. Short of death, the accident was devastating to King. He suffered from a shattered hip and pelvis, broken ribs, punctured lung, and a fractured thigh bone. It was weeks before he could leave the hospital, enduring numerous emergency surgeries. He had years of recovery ahead of him that would gash deep into his inner psyche. King had his own demons he dealt with through writing. A heavy drinker, he used The Shining as an allegory for him giving up alcohol. Writing was his way of getting his fix. Within weeks after the accident, he was writing again. But he was a changed man, unable to sit for very long, stand for very long, never really being able to get comfortable for a long writing bout. It ate at him. Being unable to effectively get at his fix, it was what nourished and helped him, and he was denied that right. In a more pointed statement, when the opportunity arose, he bought the very van that mangled him that fateful day, and he took his anger out on it and bashed it with a sledgehammer. Perhaps during that moment, he was fighting away the pain that ebbed at him while he was on that medication. The same medication that is killing 80 Americans a day. Brian, for his part, had his world turned on him. That part of Maine is not a big place, and the accident sharply divided the town. A town who was so endeared to the author that donated so much of his success to public causes, the schools, the police. It incensed King that Brian's ruling of punishment was a 12-month suspended license and 6 months suspended sentence. Ultimately, Brian was going to get his license back, and it ate at King. In interviews, he described how he fantasized about confronting Brian, what he would do and how he would handle it, but it ultimately came back to him dealing with a simpleton, a man who had nothing in his life, nothing in his head. A confrontation would never yield a satisfying result. So King did the next best thing and wrote to get his fix. He continued work on the Dark Tower series. Interestingly enough, there is a scene where a van is veering off the road, nearly killing a hapless pedestrian. Spoiler alert, Jake Chambers, the hero of the saga, swooped in and saved the pedestrian from the van. The driver, described as an irresponsible and mentally deficient oaf, happened to be named Brian Smith. On September 21st of 2000, Deputy Sheriff Everett Smith arrived upon a trailer. It was in a heavily wooded area right outside the limits of Fryeburg, Maine. Smith arrived for a wellness check on the occupant, who had not been seen for a while. When no one answered, the deputy forced open the door and walked through the less than opulent dwelling. There on the bed lay the occupant. He at first appeared to be asleep, but it didn't take long to see that he was not breathing. Everett arrived to find his brother, Brian Smith, dead and alone in his trailer, finally released from his pain. It was noted that there were several empty bottles of pain medication on the bedside. A toxicology report showed he had overdosed on fentanyl, an opioid-based pain reliever. It was later found that Brian had recently hurt himself again and was given the prescription to help. It apparently did the job and more. It was the same prescription medication given to Stephen King after their encounter 15 months prior, and he was still on it upon Brian's death. The day that Brian was found was also a remarkable date. It was Stephen King's birthday, a day shared in life and death by these two strangers. Two strangers who irrevocably changed each other, all while just trying to get their fix. Thank you for listening. Entwined is a podcast that releases every other week and is written, recorded, and produced by P.S. McKay and Elliot Gladstone. This episode was written by P.S. McKay. Please tune in next time to see what Elliot Gladstone has in store for us. For more information about the show and the authors, please check out entwinedpodcast.com or visit our Twitter page at entwinedpodcast.